This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Hello? I'm Howard Mirziak, founder and president of Lacuna Incorporated. Why remember a destructive love affair? Here at Lacuna, we have perfected a safe, effective technique for the focused erasure of troubling memories. In a matter of hours, our patented non-surgical procedure will rid you of painful memories and allow you a new and lasting peace of mind you'd never imagined possible.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. And it is Throwback Tuesday, that time of the week where we just look back at movies in the past that we've loved. Maybe in the future we'll do ones we hated, but so far we've been sticking to ones we enjoyed. And today we are going to be throwing it back to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Also known as the movie that all of our faces lit up at when Lin suggested it.
Yeah. It's one of I think it's one of our favorite movies. I think is that safe to say?
That's safe to say.
It's literally the movie that if anyone forces me to say what is your favorite movie of all time, that's the one I pick.
That's the one that comes up.
Yes.
Like of all time.
Yeah, because it isn't really because it's difficult for me to pick one movie. Mm-hmm. But you know, people always force you, and for me, I feel like this hits all of those points that I love about film.
Yeah.
And so I always end up picking this one.
So this is one of those movies that I still cannot tell what it's actually about. Or more like, I can't actually tell what the movie is trying to say. It's basically, for those who haven't seen it, it's basically about a guy named Joel and how he meets a girl named Clementine, and they go through the ups and downs of relationship, and then Joel wants to erase Clementine from his memory.
Well, actually, Clementine does it first.
Yes, that's yes. Right.
Yeah, so I think what happens is that they... it's hard to say when this happens exactly in the movie, simply because the movie is a non-linear film, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't take place from point A to point B. Instead, it actually really starts at about point Y or W and then throws it back to A and then ends on Z. So it kind of like zooms around all over the place. But basically, it's two people who... you know, at some point have a decaying relationship. Mm-hmm. Their relationship is not going well. And Clementine decides to take advantage of that little ad that you heard right at the top of the show Lacuna Inc.
Yeah.
And basically what they do is they map out
your memories, and then you can choose to basically erase a particular person's existence from your memories,
and
because they
cause
you too much pain.
And then after that, they send out postcards to all your friends and family saying, mm-hmm. never mention this person again. So, yeah, I think what happens is Joel finds out that Clementine did this to him, and then he decides that he wants to do that himself.
In his desperation, he wants to do it himself. Mm. And I think that concept of For Eternal Sunshine is the best part about Eternal Sunshine, because it isn't a wholly original film. Like, it uses the two of the oldest Hollywood tropes, which are like romance and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. But it approaches both in a way that hasn't been done before. Romance is fine, but it approaches sci-fi in a way that is completely original and completely different, in a way, in the sense that it sort of grounds it and makes it almost boring. Because it puts it in a boring, bleak, very realistic.
It happens in what looks like a dentist's office, like some dingy basement dentist mm-hmm. office. But I think it's worth mentioning that all of this might be explained if you were to know that it was written by Charlie Kaufman, mm-hmm. Who made films like Being John Malkovich. It was directed by Michel Gondry, who made movies like Be Kind, Rewind. Joel is played by Jim Carrey, mm-hmm. And
who made movies like Ace Ventura.
Yes, that's right. And Kate Winslet, who made movies like Titanic, plays Clementine. So it really is a bizarre sort of coming together of talents and elements and moving parts, which all feel like they shouldn't go together.
Yeah, it's a very surreal film, right? That's part of its charm, the idea, because it deals in memory, mm-hmm. Because it a lot of it actually takes place inside someone's mind. Mm-hmm. And that really allows them to play with different symbols and ideas of what it would be like to travel through your memory, mm-hmm. what it would be like if there were people in your brain picking it apart and in some cases pulling out parts of the wreckage and going, I'm going to use this in order to have a relationship of my own, which actually takes place within the film as well, with one particularly, you know, noxious
character,
who decides to try to, I suppose, use Joel and Clementine's past relationship, pick through the wreckage and then go court Clementine. Mm-hmm. And so I think it plays with all that, but it also plays with the very characters themselves, because mm-hmm. Joel is your classic intellectual sad sack. You know, he's somebody who's just smart enough to know that he probably shouldn't be the sad.
No.
And just sad enough to not want to find out why he's so sad. So he embodies that classic character, while Clementine is, and this has been pointed out multiple times over, she is the manic dream pixie girl trope years before it was coined.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also manic pixie girl trope shown to be what it actually is, meaning with the underbelly, with the baggage that comes with that trope. And I think that's actually why these two characters are so brilliant, because they are cast against type, definitely. You have Jim Carrey being the one that has the fewer lines, who is stoic. You have someone like Kate Winslet, who you know, can emote with an eyebrow, being the big, brassy, loud impulsive
blue
orange, whatever hair colored person. And that sort of dynamic between the both of them really sets the tone for who these characters are.
And also, since the movie came out in 2004, and since then people have come out arguing against the manic pixie dream girl, saying that Clementine is not a manic pixie dream girl, mm-hmm. she's the anti-manic pixie dream girl. So there are arguments against that whole trope as well. And everything we've just said, the movie sort of focuses on the characters, focuses on their relationships, focuses on what it means to wipe someone you love from your memory so that they cannot cause you any more pain, while always ignoring the sci-fi of it all. So the sci-fi becomes like the backdrop. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that happen in a movie, because normally when you have memory wipes, and memory wipes are like a common Hollywood trope, you would focus on the memory wiping itself, something like Inception, where, you know, the mind becomes the focus point of the movie. In this, it becomes like the background, something that's happening behind the characters, something that the characters sort of interact with but are not surprised by. And I guess the way they sort of plot them in this world that's like half real and half in Jim Carrey's head is amazing. It goes back to Charlie Kaufman's way of writing and how mm-hmm. he tells stories.
But it also speaks, I think, to Michel Gondry's direction, right? Mm. And also the beauty of the set. For example, there is one pivotal scene that takes place where essentially the world is crumbling around them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in an old house and the house itself starts to fall apart. The tide on the beaches of Montauk starts to take it away. And you look at that and you look at the practical tactility of that
yes.
scene, right? It's a very, very tactile scene. You know that they are in fact in this, well, basically shack, mm-hmm. In this old wooden shack. And that, I think, captures exactly what this movie is about, because it is simultaneously a poetic idea of what it looks like when something that lives in the core of your brain mm-hmm. is pulled out of it, something that lives when your brain starts to be pulled apart. But on the other hand, it's not special effects. It does actually feel like a very real, going back to the dentist office thing, that real sort of grimy, lived in, this could really happen kind of quality, which grounds an otherwise quite almost zany premise, right? This idea of being able to eliminate someone.
Yeah, a lot of it is told with lighting. Like, a lot of it is just mm-hmm. shown with Jim Carrey walking through his house or some set that he recognizes, and then you just see basically people playing with torchlights and shining it at other characters in his mind mm-hmm. and his memories.
Or the lights go off behind him as he's walking, dup, 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 right? So it's a very, it's used in many films, but here it's used to literally depict something going dark in your brain, mm-hmm. which I think is very clever. But I think that it also, that helps me sort of figure out, I think, in some ways, which is what you said earlier. Is it sci-fi? Is it romance? For me, it doesn't feel like sci-fi, and I love sci-fi. Mm-hmm. But the reason it doesn't feel like sci-fi is precisely because of things like that. It seems much more interested in making this a, like removing the fi aspect of sci-fi and making it something real. Like, this is what it would feel like.
If Lacuna Inc. existed in the world. Yeah.
So we're talking today and throwing it back to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Is this a movie that you liked? You know, did you watch it? How do you feel about it? Are you planning to rewatch it? Let us know. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
Too many guys think I'm a concept, or I complete them, or I'm going to make them alive. But I'm just a up girl who's looking for my own peace of mind. Don't assign me yours.
I remember that speech really well.
I had you pegged, didn't I?
Yeah, the whole human race pegged.
Probably.
I still thought you were going to save my life, even after that.
You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. And today on Throwback Tuesday, we are taking it back to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, a romantic, sci-fi-ish, speculative-ish story. I think about what it would feel like if you wanted to remove somebody that you really loved who really hurt you from your brain.
That's it. That's all.
Yeah. I mean,
it's an easy premise.
Yeah. But that is kind of what's at the heart of the film, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff surrounding it. But it comes down to that thought experiment. And before we get back into, I suppose, parsing the different aspects of the film, I just wanted to say or ask, how do you feel about that premise? Because we've all asked ourselves that question, I think. Everyone who has rewatched Eternal Sunshine, not just watched, but rewatched, I suspect, has thought to themselves, I wonder if I would do this. And so the movie has its own message at the end about what Joel and Clementine choose to do. Have you guys kind of come to a conclusion about this?
So I was going to ask you about what that message was, because I still can't figure it out. Like, every time I see that movie, it's a different message.
I don't know
what Charlie Kaufman or Michelle Gondry are trying to say. I don't know what the actors are trying to say, because there's so many different ways of dissecting the movie. Mm-hmm. But I also think the movie works differently depending on when you watch it in your life. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw it first when I was, 19 or 20. And at that time, the movie had a completely different impact. And I saw it in a completely different way. Watching it now, I realized that everyone in the movie is written like a teenager. Like, everyone approaches or sort of reacts to their problems in a very teenage way. And I don't know why that is.
I think it's to do with the irrationality of love, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what the movie contrasts. It contrasts the cold, hard incision of Lacuna Inc. of just like, cut, 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 cut. This person's gone now. Congratulations, you can move on with your life. And with the real life messiness of love and the truth that because the other thing that the movie shows is that you can do that. It doesn't mean you're going to be happy. Mm-hmm. It just means you might not be in as much pain. But all the people who underwent the Lacuna process within the film, I wouldn't describe any of them as happy. They're all kind of broken, and there is a hole in them because there is a hole. Somebody cut something out of them.
So the reason I think it feels that way also is because we are only shown, and most of what we see are memories, we are only shown the highs and the lows of what they've been through. We don't see them, you know, we see a couple of scenes where they're in a restaurant and they're like, oh my God, is this what life is? Repeated dinners with the same person. But even that is a low. We don't see them just kind of chilling and watching a movie or whatever. It's the worst moments of the relationship and the best moments of the relationship. In some ways, maybe that's the way most of us tend to remember our relationship. Relationships as well, when we look back over a few years of things, but that might be why it has that feel of that extremes of emotion which you associate with teenage love.
I also just wanted to quickly say that while we've been talking about science fiction and romance, I think an additional genre that is part of Eternal Sunshine is the psychological thriller.
Yes.
Because there is a sense of someone being hunted. Because, of course, as Joel's memories get wiped by the Lacuna team, who, by the way, are, you know, it's Kirsten Dunst, Mark Ruffalo, Tom Wilkinson, and Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
So it's not like this movie really is stacked. So as Joel is kind of somewhat lucid and able to hear them talking above him as his memories are being wiped, there is a sense of a man being hunted, mm-hmm. right? Because he's running through his brain trying to collect the things that he wants mm-hmm. to keep. Mm-hmm. And I think that that makes it an easy entry for people who think that dramatic films are not for them, people who think that romantic films are not for them, you know? And so if you are a fan of psychological thrillers, actually, this movie has that same quality and pace to it.
But since you said Mark Ruffalo and Tom Wilkinson and Kirsten Dunst, none of these people are bad. There's no villain in this movie. So that trope completely ignores that part of having like an evil organization trying to wipe someone's mind.
They're providing a service that people obviously seem to want.
And that you ask them to do.
Yeah. So yes, there isn't actually a villain. And even they are presented to be actually pretty complicated characters, equally affected by this technology or this conceit at the center of the story. I do want to answer Lynn's question, though, which we started this segment with, which is whether, and I've backed and forth on this many times, I would think, having been through some pretty difficult relationships, I've come to the conclusion that I wouldn't do it. And that's primarily because I feel like I'm so shaped by those relationships mm-hmm. that I wouldn't want that taken away.
So that's the conclusion that I came to when I watched it like the most recent time. Mm-hmm. But I was 50-50 when I saw it as a teenager.
Yeah.
So, which is why I said that when I watched it again, I was like, Jim Carrey plays a teenager in like a 30-year-old body, like someone in his late 30s. Kate Winslet, Clementine, looks like someone who's in her 20s but also reacts like a teenager. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know. Like recently, I was like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't do it because those are the things that shape you as a person, but depending on when you watch this movie, it might have like very different impact and very different effect on you as a person, I think.
Would you, Lynn?
So the ending of the movie absolutely destroys me every single time that I watch it. I would not. For that reason, I would not. You know, because I think it does exactly what you want a good sci-fi romance psychological thriller mashup to do, which is that it puts forth a great premise. It tells a really wonderful and very deeply personal story, and it makes you think. So because it achieves all that, and because I think that there is a very specific point to the story, even though, like you said, Arvin, you can read it any number of ways, I don't think I would. So I think, Sharmila, earlier you were saying that you wanted to talk a little bit about Jim Carrey in particular.
Yeah, so for me, I think that this movie came along at a really interesting time in Jim Carrey's career because he was trying to move into that dramatic acting trope. He had done things like Truman Show. Actually, Truman Show is another one of my really all-time favorite films.
Save it for a future throwback.
We will. And then he was doing things like Man on the Moon. And so I think one of the reasons this film actually works so well is because you recognize Jim Carrey from the outside. At that point in his career, he was a big enough star that he was Jim Carrey. He wasn't an unrecognizable name. And so to see him in this role somehow makes it all the more sadder because it's almost like a post-Jim Carrey, a sort of deconstruction of that sadness that you feel exists underneath many comedians. And that's a big part of what works for me in this
film. This movie kind of exposes that.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Because I feel differently. I feel that part of the appeal is watching Jim Carrey disappear. I feel like because he's a big star who has taken this role in what was a really tiny movie at mm-hmm. the time, you know, they weren't ever sure it was going to be made. You watch him completely disappear into this role of an everyman. And I think that kind of made it a special performance.
I think for me, it's watching stuff like Ace Ventura and The Mask and all these other, you know, comedy, the big Jim Carrey roles. I've always kind of known that he was a good actor, so he didn't take me by surprise. Kate Winslet took me by surprise. Like, for me, this is her best performance. Like, if I was to name, like, one Kate Winslet film to watch, this would be it, because it's so different from everything else that she has done. But Jim Carrey, no. But also, I think this sort of gave him leeway to do other dramatic roles that he has taken on. If you go watch the trailers for this movie, they market it as a Jim Carrey comedy. It's got all the funny
bits in it. It's weird, isn't it? The trailers are all marketed to be funny,
which
tells you about where he was at that point and what they were trying to sell.
Which brings me, I think, to the final question that I wanted to close the show off with, which is, would this movie be made today. It is 16 years old now, and it is, even at the time, I think it was a bit of a hard sell. It went through several iterations. Memento came out before it, and I think that gave Michel Gondry kind of the shakes, because he was like, ah, it's the same film. And so we talk about this a lot, about the lack of... the lack of original material that comes out of Hollywood, but also the lack of genuinely risky stuff, you know. And this, I don't think this is that easy a sell. It's become a cult classic. Mm-hmm. It was a hit at the time, mostly because the budget wasn't very large.
It was a hit comparatively.
Correct. But it's not on paper, certainly, something that you go, yeah, this one's going to be a huge success.
I feel like it. Given release with movies like Knives Out coming out now, I feel like it would be made today in that vein. If you had a star of today attached to it who was interested in taking on something more experimental, it could definitely be marketed to a sort of an audience that's been primed on things like Inception and like that kind of a genre. I mean, sci-fi is a lot more mainstream now than it was even 16 years ago. So I think on that premise, if it was made, we wouldn't see a comedy trailer. We'd see a super sci-fi trailer.
We would, but we would also see like an Oscar campaign trailer. I think this movie would have come out somewhere in like October to December. They would have like targeted it for the awards and gone like, oh, look at this comedic actor doing something different. Come and check it out. It's like all those Steve Carell dramatic turns that we've seen. This would be that sort of movie. But also for anyone who's going to check it out who has not seen the movie or wants to watch it again, watch Kate Winslet's hair and how the color changes according to the story that's being told. There is a very specific way it changes, and there is a very specific story in her hair.
There are also entire internet websites dedicated to breaking down symbols and her hair color and clues within this film.
Which we haven't actually gotten into, because there's so many allusions and so many little Easter eggs that live within it. But unfortunately, we're out of time. So... Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Have you watched it? Do you love it? Do you not? Tell us. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We are always taking suggestions for Throwback Tuesday, by the way. So if there are films that you think we should watch, that you want us to cover, let us know what they are. If you would like updates on upcoming shows, we are at BFM Popcorn. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. You've been listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.